Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Welcome to another edition of Monday Night Lights. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we're powered by All Access Football. If you guys are like me, you know football's finally started up. It was fantastic checking out the weekend, seeing all the games. If you're like me, you got NFL Network, nothing better than watching the games all weekend. I mean, I know they're filling the games up one game after another. I think Saturday, they went all day long. And, you know, it kind of gets old, maybe checking those old guys, the young guys, I should say. But since I've been working with the NFL Draft Bible, watching those preseason games really takes on a whole different meaning because, you know, those younger guys that we follow that are trying to make teams, you kind of have a little bit of a relationship with or you kind of really know some knowledge about them. So, you know, come third, fourth quarter, you don't mind seeing the, you know, the Michael Ray Garvins from Florida State who's trying to make the team as a punt kick returner for the Arizona Cardinals. If you're not familiar with him, he ran one of the fastest 40s in the nation this past spring. So little tidbits like that, something to keep your eye out on. So remember, everybody's out there trying to make a job. Last week, we were fortunate enough to cover the Steelers' home opener for the preseason against the Arizona Cardinals. And while I was there, I touched base with some of the players, got in contact with John Clayton as well as John Gruden. And I just want to bring that to you guys, something for you guys to listen to. And we're going to jump into it real quick because we got a lot of people on the docket here that we want you to hear from. And the first guy we talked with was Chris Beanie Wells. He wasn't able to play, and we're going to listen to him.
Yeah, we're here with Chris Beanie Wells. How does it feel not being able to step out there on the field tonight?
Oh. Terrible. I wanted to play out there so bad and be out there with the guys and get some work in.
When do you think you're going to be ready to go?
The goal is to play next week.
Excellent. Chris, I'll see you in the locker room. Great.
All right.
Now, is this Beanie Wells real fast? Like I said, you know, he said he was anxious to get out there, and he also said that he'd be able to get out there this upcoming weekend. So that's a little bit of information for you that we should see the preview of the first game by number 26, the former Ohio State standout, who's now an Arizona Cardinal. And also touching base with these guys, seemed like a real nice team. A lot of the guys were real friendly, nice to talk with, and amazing enough, we brought you Larry Fitzgerald.
We're speaking with Larry Fitzgerald. So, Larry, I mean, since the offseason, the Super Bowl, what's it like to finally get back out on the field?
Oh, it's always good to get back on the field and be able to play and compete. And I think we did a decent job today. Played against a good football team, you know, a veteran savvy team. We were able to come out victorious, but I think we have some things we can definitely build on and take away from this game.
And what's it like coming back home in the pit?
Oh, it was fun. I got to see a lot of familiar faces, and that's always pleasurable. But you know, my main reason to come here was to come here and play a solid game, and come out and try to get a win, which we weren't obviously able to do.
I mean, I don't know how much you've gotten to see Chris Beanie Wells in the backfield, but what kind of, you know, what do you think he can bring to your offense?
What is the physical nature he brings? I mean, he's a big bruising back, comes from a great program, so he's used to winning, and I hope he can bring some of that winning tradition he brought from Ohio State here, and just kind of just help us build on a positive season next year and keep moving forward.
And that Super Bowl run you made last year, I mean, in your play in particular, it seems like you just took over the playoffs. I mean, you're basically uncoverable. I mean, you took that into Honolulu where you're the MVP of the Pro Bowl. I mean, how do you build off a season like that?
Well, just continue to keep working. I'm one of those guys never satisfied. You know, the glass is never full. I have a long way to go. Tonight I only had one catch, and I can definitely improve on that. And we lost, and I can improve on that. So every week, every practice, I can always take things from that and build on it.
Excellent. And, I mean, looking at the season coming up, I mean, do you guys take it with a little edge of like a desire to even go after it harder when they don't really consider the Cardinals as a favorite to return to the Super Bowl?
Well, I've never been here and been favored for anything. So we kind of are used to that. We don't really like to play that card too often. We know we just come out here and play hard, and 53 guys working together, we'll go out there and put a good team on the field, and that's all that really matters.
And, I mean, growing up, I mean, is there any guys that you followed that you kind of had in your game after?
A lot of guys, you know, although I was a big Barry Sanders fan, Chris Carter, Jerome Bettis. I mean, guys like that are always guys I really look up to and I found enjoyable watching them.
Excellent. Larry, thanks for your
time. Thank you.
That was Larry Fitzgerald, standout Cardinals wide receiver. And something I asked to all the players while I was talking to them in the locker room, there's a lot of guys that I might not have actually recorded, but the sentiment was the same with all of them. I asked, how do you guys feel, you know, being the defending NFC champions, but yet there's a little discussion when, you know, people talk about the top teams in the NFC or the teams that are looking to make a Super Bowl run, you know, and you hear a lot of the Eagles, you hear a lot of Giants, maybe even Atlanta, Carolina. But it kind of falls on deaf ears, the Arizona Cardinals. And like I said, I mean, they didn't lose anything. They, you know, I think they brought in a better addition with Chris Beanie Wells. Tim Hightower looked like he ran the ball hard during the preseason opener. And he, you know, he did enough to kind of supplant Edgerrin James last season, which was questionable to some. But hence, he did accomplish that feat. And we also spoke to the other man on who lines up opposite of Larry Fitzgerald, and this is Anquan Boldin. We're at Anquan Boldin. After the, you know, Super Bowl, this is your first time some real action against a real opponent. What's it like to go out there tonight? Caught a couple passes.
I felt good, you know, to get back out and mix it up. You know, we've been in camp for about a week and a half now, going against one another, so it was good to go against another opponent.
And, I mean, everything feel okay from last off season with the facial stuff and everything?
Yeah, 100%? I'm fine. I was fine when I stepped back on the field, so no problems from that.
I mean, during that moment, was there any questions? I mean, your initial thoughts when you were coming out of it, you know, when you were going to be able to play again?
Nah. I mean, I never doubted, you know, whether or not I was going to get back on the field. It was just a matter of when. And when the doctor gave me a diagnosis, I was, you know, satisfied with that.
Excellent. So, I mean, what are your, you have any goals this season? Anything you're setting to strive for?
I mean, as a team, you know, we want to get back to where we were last year and hopefully win the Super Bowl. Personally, for myself, just have the best individual season I've had since I've gotten into the NFL. So.
And that'd be a pretty good season because you put up some pretty impressive numbers, man. You're one of the top guys out there. Definitely top for top, maybe the best in the league.
Appreciate it.
I'm not saying that because I'm standing in front of you either. I'm saying it because it's the truth.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, you're looking at the Steelers tonight. I mean, was there any, you know, looking at them, knowing that they got the prize that you wanted in February, I mean, looking across from them again, did you think about it?
Not really. You know, last year was last year. You know, this year, everybody's 0-0. And, you know, from right here, you know, we just want to build off of this week. You know, we got some things we need to clean up, but for the most part, I think we moved the ball well up and down the field versus a pretty good defense. So, I mean, we just want to pick up where we left off last year.
Excellent. I mean, and I know they use you sometimes. They use you in the backfield a little bit, you know, trick plays and stuff. Is that something we can look forward to more in 2009?
Definitely. I mean, it's something that we, you know, hold off on in the preseason. But once the season gets rolling, you'll definitely see me back there.
Excellent. Anquan, thanks for your time tonight.
No problem.
We're with Chase Bullock. If you guys, you know, from the NFL Draft Bible, familiar talking with Chase. We've been following him all the way back since February, pro days. Chase, man, we're in August. You finally got the kinks out, man. You got to go out on the field tonight. How'd it feel?
Man, it was just fun, man. A long time coming, you know. It's a great opportunity. I just try to go out there and play the best of my ability. Yeah. So, it was fun. It was a great experience, man. I had a lot of fun.
I know you registered one tackle. I remember them saying Bullock on the tackle. I mean, so what was that like to finally, you know,
man, it was
get a little hitting in?
Yeah, it was a great feeling, man. You know, just feel like all the hard work is finally paying off, you know. So, it was just a great hit. It was a good experience, and I just had fun.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised by the speed you showed out there, man.
Yeah.
You really covered some ground on a few of those plays.
Oh, yeah.
A couple guys in the press box, we even said, man, 96, man. He's really making an angle on it.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get to the ball. You know, I've been doing that my whole life, just trying to get to that ball, make plays. Yep.
So, I mean, your time in Arizona, man, how's it going with you? You buddy up with anybody yet?
Oh, yes. It's a great experience, you know. It's a great team, great coach. And me and some of the younger linebackers are pretty cool, like Cody Brown and Will Davis and Reggie Walker. We got a great bond. We hang together a lot, spend a lot of time together.
Excellent. I mean, you being on the East Coast, being down there in Flagstaff, I mean, stay busy. What do you guys do?
We pretty much just talk, man. Just talk about high school, college, like just about the old times, stuff used to happen, just experiences that we've been through. Yeah.
Excellent. And I know we spoke previously. You're talking about Aaron Henderson and the Vikings. If that comes about, any more trash talking from the Henderson brothers?
Nah. We're going to wait till the season to do that.
Excellent. Well, yeah. Chase, hey, I just want to say congratulations. Yeah. We'll keep pace with you, man.
All right. Thanks, bro.
And that was Chase Bullock and Anquan Boldin. Chase Bullock, if you guys aren't familiar with him, he's a former linebacker from the Maryland Terrapins, and he was on the NFL Draft Bible from the early February, and that's a relationship the NFL Draft Bible has, just stretching out, you know, showing that we stay in touch with these guys, and we follow Chase through his pro day, you know, after draft day, you know, the day after he got drafted, he got a phone call from Arizona, and he's been in Arizona ever since, bouncing back and forth from the East Coast when he gets a chance to get home. And last Thursday was his first time to get out there. You know, he texted me and said this was his coming out party. And he really looked solid. I know sitting up in the press box talking with a couple of scouts, his speed was something we kind of took notice of. And, you know, to give props to the NFL Draft Bible, just a little love, I was sitting there talking with an Edmonton Eskimo scout, and, you know, said who I was affiliated with, and he was kind enough to say, man, you guys really know your stuff. And that also went on to say he knew John Murphy, who used to be associated with the NFL Draft Bible, who's now with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. So, like I said, it's nice to feel respected, nice to feel like you belong, and like I said, the work that I think the NFL Draft Bible, everyone is a team, you know, what we bring you guys, like I said, we're trying to make it so you guys can hear it and learn, listen. But Chase Bullock looked really well. He was excited. Like I said, he got a lot of time in the third, fourth quarter, looked real strong. And Bolden, there's a guy who was focused. Talked to a lot of guys in that locker room, and there was one guy who just kind of really seems, it's just about getting it done. And there's not much else that seemed to really what he wanted to talk about. I mean, the guy was just focused. And, I mean, when I've done this, since I've been doing this, there's a few guys that I've come across it with that same mentality, and he was one of them. I mean, just really seemed like it's all about the game and just getting it done. And you guys obviously were listening. Bolden said that we can look for him for a little bit more trickery, a little bit more running plays. I know he took he took a few snaps out of the backfield last season. And like I said, that's something I know you fantasy guys out there, you know, you never know. That could be an extra few carries, you know, tally to that receiver total. And a lot of people don't like to, or at least they don't remember, but Bolden was blowing Larry Fitzgerald stat-wise out of the water last season. Prior to the injury at the end of the Jets game, I mean, Bolden was on fire. He was Kurt Warner's favorite target. I mean, and you look back on it, I mean, the guy was just tearing it up. And then the hammies went bad, and he started to miss time. And then Larry Fitzgerald just took over the NFL. I mean, on the, you know, that Super Bowl run that the Cardinals had. I mean, like I said, like I told Larry, I mean, it was unstoppable. You know, carry that all the way to Honolulu where he took the MVP prize. Talking to some other players, I talked with Antrell Roll. He's also a cornerback for Miami, turned safety. He also does the return duties, and we spoke with him after the game, and a real nice guy. A guy like Roll, I mean, he brings a lot to the table just because of his skills. I mean, you're talking about a big, big, you know, for, you know, decent-sized defensive back, and he got that return skills.
Here, Antron Roll. How was it tonight? How was it feel after the hiatus of January?
It felt great. You know, I mean, you know, we're all great friends, you know, on and off the field, and you know, it's just a great environment to come back and play with and start, you know, the 2009 season. You got the NFC champions and the Super Bowl champions. I mean, no better way to start that off.
Yeah. And how was it the return game of it? How's that feel?
It feels good. You know, I just got to remember to wipe my arms off before I go out there. You know, I had too much lotion and stuff on my hands. So, but you know, once I go out there and get a feel for it, you know, it's a natural thing for me. So, I mean, it's going to be a great opportunity.
And the team, how you guys feel as a team? I mean, is there any letdown? Do you guys feel more motivated right now?
We're extremely motivated. You know, they're definitely not going to be any letdown this season. You know, we just have to pick everyone up from the same pace, the ones, the twos, and the threes, and that way, you know, if someone goes down, you know, there's no offsets. But, I mean, we'll be great.
And speaking of Miami football, do you keep touch base with any of your former teammates?
Yeah, I stay in touch with all of them. You know, that's what I work out on during my off season. And, you know, those guys are going to be hungry this year, and they're going to make a great run for it.
Excellent. And speaking of Miami football, too, I mean, who are some of the guys that you we should look out for this year?
The guy I'm really looking for is number 31, Spence. I mean, he's definitely going to be the leader of that defense. And I think, you know, he has the leadership quality and the playmaking ability to, you know, take them all away.
And what's it like going up against Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin at camp every day?
I mean, you know, y'all see it on Sundays. I mean, I think we get the worst part in practice because it's each and every day. So, you know, those guys are spectacular. You know, they make us, you know, who we are today. So, you know, I take my hat off to them.
Excellent. And Charles Lake, thanks for your time.
That was Antro Rowan. We got a caller here on line one. I'm trying to take this call. You there, caller?
Hello.
Hello? Are you there? Are you there, caller?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. How you doing? What you
good,
doing?
Good. What?
All right. That was productive. That was a productive call there. And back to Antrell Roll. Like I said, he was referring to taking that lotion off his arms because the opening punt, he fumbled it, and the Steelers recovered the ball. So he was referring to too much lotion on his hands and arms, something that he needs to wipe off prior to him getting out there on the field. He also mentioned Spence. Defensive guy from Miami. Like you said, they keep in contact. They stay in contact with those guys. They bring it back. It's nice to see them, that camaraderie that the U has and all these college guys. And when we talked to Matt Leinart, that was something I just brought up to him, just asked him how much he frequents back to USC or how much contact he has with it. And I wish I would have known prior to that, the injury to their quarterback at USC, leaving the freshman with the, with the nice inside track to taking that over. And we're going to listen to Leinart now. And here he is.
With Matt Leinart here after the preseason over. How'd you feel tonight?
I felt good. Felt good moving the football. A couple throws, you just kind of getting the kinks out. But overall, I felt really good and just got to build on this. But I felt poised and knew where I was going with the football. So that's all you can really ask for. You just got to keep working.
And, your progress, looking at the second string, is Kurt Warner any of a mentor to you?
Oh, yeah, he's been a mentor for me my whole career, and I always continue to look up to him and learn as much as I can from him because, when my time comes, I want to be prepared and, play at a level that he's played at.
Excellent. And looking back to your USC days, do you touch base with those guys at all?
Yeah, always, some of the guys I was real close with, Reggie and obviously now we got Dominique here and Deuce, so it's a tight family, even though you don't talk as much as you used to, when you see each other, it's good. So
excellent. I'll let you get back in there.
Okay.
And we were heading into the locker room prior, just right after the game, so no media was in immediate afterwards, so I had to cut the Leinart shirt. But like I said, he said he still touches base with Reggie. Mr. Reggie Bush is looking to maybe finally make an impact in this league. A lot is going to be expected from Reggie Bush. And not to get off the subject of what we're talking about with the Cardinals, but a guy like Bush, when you look at him, this might be a season where he maybe puts it together a little bit better than he has in the past. I think since he's kind of gotten in the NFL, he's kind of been the poster boy, and he's kind of got that silver spoon. And I think that silver spoon is kind of starting to rust. And I think it's, evident when you start to see the love that Pierre Thomas is getting in the media circles out there. When you start seeing, Pierre Thomas, saying that he's going to be able to carry the bulk of this team and how good he looks. Reggie Bush is a competitor, and he wants to be the best, and he has the skill set to be special. But maybe this is what he needed instead of kind of having everything given to him. Since he's kind of gotten to the NFL, this might be a nice shot for him to kind of redeem himself and prove that he's worthy of the draft selection. I think, what, he was third, fourth overall. So, like I said, something to look at, something to think about. And getting back to Matt Leinart, he was talking about, Kurt Warner, what a mentor he is to him and how he's helped him, in their time together in Arizona. And that's evident to everybody. And for Matt Leinart, also known that Brian St. Pierre has a real shot at unseating Matt as the number two. So, this is a crucial preseason for him. There's a lot of money tied up into him. there's a lot of teams looking for a quarterback. I don't know what his value would be since, you know, if that is true that he, you know, gets supplanted by the third string guy right now, Brian St. Pierre. You know, I don't know what kind of value, if any, that holds. But like I said, there are teams out there, you know. I mean, I think a few teams that are, you know, I think Minnesota, I think the Brett Favre thing still isn't dead. Still wouldn't be surprised to see Favre out there. So the Matt Leinart, that's something to keep your eye on as this preseason progresses. And like I said, you know, Kim and Brian St. Pierre, those are the two guys. So, you know, like I said, if those guys are on ever on national television again or even in the Arizona area, you know, that's something you better take note of. You know, you might be getting bored because Bolden and the boys are out, but, you know, make sure you're starting to watch these third and fourth quarter because, you know, these guys, you know, they're going to be your backups. So you're going to want to be familiar with, you know, what they're doing because those are going to be the guys you're kind of stuck with. And Matt said, you know, Dominique Berg, the tight end, I think he was drafted back in 06, third round by St. Louis. You know, he said, you know, it's nice to have a couple USC guys on the team, you know, something to look back on and, you know, touch base with. And that's something that seems like a lot of those guys, I think, you know, they really enjoy having a couple buddies that, you know, they can shoot the breeze with, guys they played with. And like I said, I think that goes a long way. You know, I think it makes these guys feel a little bit more comfortable. You know, I mean, it's always good to have a friend, a familiar face when you're doing something as important as these guys are. And prior to this game, spent the week in Canton covering the Hall of Fame game, and I again get to play the Kevin Mawai interview from a week ago. But interesting guy, he's, you know, 16-year vet, and he's also, I think, one of the union chiefs. So a lot to say when it comes to the CBAs and things as such.
Hey, Kevin Mawai, want to have that?
Yeah, sure.
We're here with Kevin Mawai after the Hall of Fame enshrinement game. Kevin, you know, you're entering your 16th season, and obviously you are the heartbeat of this offensive line. How you feel?
I feel good. I haven't done anything. I was happy with the way that our young guys played today, and I just look forward to when I can actually start getting some work in myself.
Excellent. And so you feel excellent this
offseason? Yeah, I feel pretty good. I had my surgery in January. I'm about 6.5 months out, and we're working, progressing through training camp, and I made some strides over the last couple months. I feel really good about, and you know, I'll start getting more and more work in as we go through this preseason, and you know, be ready to go by opener.
Excellent. I mean, and the Titans running the ball, being so run oriented, is that your type of style?
That's what we do. I mean, we understand that, you know, we pride ourselves on running the football, and you know, if we can have a solid running game, it opens up things, makes our quarterback's job a little bit easier, and we got some good running backs. Chris Johnson, Lindell, and we got the new kid Ringer, and he's going to be a great player. But then in the pass game, you know, we have the ability to protect Kerry Collins and let him hit some targets downfield.
Excellent. And speaking of Lindell White, the weight loss, what was your reaction when you saw him?
He looked great. I mean, he looks good. He's obviously a lot thinner. He's running the ball really well. And, you know, just hopefully he can stay that dedicated throughout the season. I'm sure he will.
Excellent. And your relationship with Hall of Famer Mike Munchak, you're up.
You know, it's just great. He was one of the first guys to call me when I was a free agent back in 06 and asked if I'd be, you know, what if I thought about playing here. And he's a great player, and he's probably a better coach than he was a player. But I've been fortunate enough to play under some really good coaches, and he's probably one of the best ever.
Excellent. Mr. Mawai, we just want to wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
That was Kevin Mawai, the center for the Tennessee Titans, and he was touching base on his offensive line case, Mike Munchak. Hall of Famer, spent his career with the Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans. Fantastic guy, and like I said, interesting guy because you know, he's involved with the union, one of the higher ups in that part of the players' union. And like I said, at the time, just pushed for time, wanted to get into the CBA stuff, but didn't have time to closure. But something I'd like to get him back on, something I'd like to bring up and get some perspective on the CBAs. And last Thursday, we were able to hit John Clayton right up for his thoughts on Michael Vick going to the Philadelphia Eagles.
We're here with John Clayton of ESPN. John, recent news of Michael Vick going to the Philadelphia Eagles. Your first thoughts?
Didn't see that one coming. I mean, it's like a very strange fit, a West Coast offense with a 52% thrower. I mean, obviously, he's a great athlete. I mean, the curious part is that McNabb's on a 2-year contract, and now Vic's on a 2-year contract. Obviously, a big difference in the salaries of both, but you know, it's an interesting fit.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked by too when that news came on just now. I mean, do you think? I mean, what role? I mean, do you think there's a quarterback role? I mean, that's
not right.
That's,
well, I mean, they needed an arm this week because Kevin Cobb was hurt with a knee injury. It's not a serious knee injury, so they had to sign one quarterback and they had to let him go, and then they had to bring in another quarterback. So they needed another arm. You know, in some ways, you kind of get a free pass on him the first 5 weeks because it's not going to count against your roster if he's not playing. So it's like a guy you can develop, but overall it's a very strange fit because, you know, Andy Reid doesn't like to run the ball.
Yeah.
And Vic's a runner. Hard to see how that's a fit, but, you know, West Coast guy, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, do you think there's any long-term maybe Vic, you know? I mean,
you never know.
Reid's such a mentor of the quarterback position. Maybe, you know, he can work his magic on a guy like Michael Vick. No?
I mean, certainly he gets good coaching. He gets a stable organization. That helps Vic out. Now the question is, how is the reaction going to be for McNabb? I mean, McNabb finally got through all the problems of, you know, wondering if he was going to be the starting quarterback when they give him a 2-year, $24 million contract. But now he's got to start maybe wondering, not this year, because obviously Vic's not going to challenge him this year, but what about next year?
Excellent. And watching this game tonight between the Steelers and the Cardinals, anything you take note of?
I was a little distracted for about a quarter because of Michael Vick, because I had to write about 700, 800 words on that. But, I mean, I was kind of impressed with what I saw of the Cardinal changes in the defense. I mean, in the sense that they had one clean guy, maybe two clean guys coming in, at least putting pressure on each play, both on run and pass. I thought that was impressive. Thought Warner moved well. Certainly, I thought that against a tough run defense, I thought Mendenhall shows that, you know, he can be a pretty good one because you can see he hits the hole pretty well. And then I think, you know, Sweden making the one catch is encouraging. So, you know, that worked out. So, you know, I think it was pretty good for both sides.
Excellent. John, thanks for your time.
Okay.
That was John Clayton of ESPN. He was kind enough to join us on the NFL Draft Bible, Monday Night Lights, powered by All Access Football. I'm your host, Bo Marchant. And this is something we're going to be looking forward to bringing you guys every year or all this season. I know that I'm trying to fill up the docket every weekend with games, so I'm going to be able to cover stuff and bring this stuff to you guys. So as we get a little more insight and some better interviews, stuff to bring you guys, you know, obviously funner to touch base and hear these guys up close than, you know, just hearing them from other sources, getting asked what you want to ask. You know, Clayton touched on a couple interesting points when it comes to Rashad Mendenhall and Lima Swede. I mean, Rashad Mendenhall, I know he hasn't really wowed the Pittsburgh nation, Steeler nation. But, you know, there was a point in the second quarter where Mendenhall really kind of got a groove. It was only a couple series during that second quarter, but I think he had a run of 5 yards and a run of 7 yards and another run of five and, like, another run of five. So, you know, he hit the hole nice. I think any running back needs to get that feeling, that nice, you know, momentum, get some carries under your belt, get the feet ready. And like I said, you know, it's still, I mean, it's his only second season, and Willie Parker's still in house. And prior to the game, I was talking with a lot of fans. I was actually polling them, just asking them their thoughts on Mendenhall and Willie Parker. You know, something I was trying to put together prior to the show. But talking to close to about 10 to 20 fans, you know, at the time I asked them about Michael Vick and their thoughts of bringing in Michael Vick as a Steeler. And between the about 10 to 20 people I talked to, roughly maybe just say 16, two of those groups said they wouldn't want Michael Vick on the team. And this was, you know, Steeler fans. You know, they all thought he could help the team in one way or another. You know, they immediately all thought back to Cordell Stewart and what he kind of brought to the Steelers game. And, you know, they thought it was a great idea. And I think a guy like Michael Vick, when you look at him now, you know, everybody was hesitant to pull the trigger. But I think after he gets signed by the Eagles, and I bet there's a lot of teams out there that wish they might have done the same. Because, you know, some people even question how Jim Moore Jr. and that when he was in Atlanta, how they used Vick. I mean, Vic really wasn't a pocket passer, and I think they tried to make him a pocket passer instead of him, you know, using his legs and, you know, his physical God-given gifts to what they can be. So, I mean, Andy Reid, I mean, you know, he's a quarterback guru. He can get a lot out of these guys. And like John Clayton said, he's in a stable organization. You know, I think he's obviously, you know, unless something, what happened to Donovan McNabb, you know, I don't think he has to go in there with the perspective that, hey, you know, I'm going to battle for the number one job. saying if he went to a team like Minnesota or maybe even the St. Louis Rams, but there's some question marks with the starting quarterbacks. Wait, did I say that? No, there's no questions with the starting quarterbacks in Minnesota. I take that back. They are very solid. There's no question that Sage Rosenfels and Tavares Jackson are the clear-cut starters. They have no outside desires to bring in anybody else. What was I thinking? I must be on goofy pills. But getting back to that, a guy like Michael Vick goes to the Philadelphia Eagles. He's in a nice place, a lot of weapons. And like I said, it's a nice place for him. Like I said, a real nice place for him. You can give him some time to, you know, learn, get his feet, you know, on the ground. And like I said, a smart play on the Eagles, 2 years. That way you're not committed too far, too long. And you never know a guy like Vic. I mean, the skill set's there. We've all seen him play. I mean, you're not the number one draft pick of the NFL for nothing. You don't get that honor for just being a, you know, somebody, maybe a little good. The guy's, you know, forget what he's done off the field, football-wise, you know, getting the ball into his hands, he's pretty spectacular, and that's something you guys can't take away from him. So, like I said, I ain't going to be the one to cast stones here. And like I said, Clayton, you know, he said it was a shock. I think it was a shock to all people. I mean, I remember when I saw it go across the screen, I was like, wow, Michael Vick to the Eagles. Well, what's this, Michael Vick to the Eagles? Where did this come from? You know, I really thought I mean, obviously, the best interest for himself would be to go to the NFL. I know talking to Nation Hahn of the UFL, he's their all-access guy. You know, we discussed the possibilities of Vic coming. I'm sure there were discussions. I know I talked to the scouts at the CFL. You know, and they just said, you know, felonies. They weren't sure about the felony parts, but they know that they didn't hear of anything of Vic going to the CFL. So who knows how much UFL talk there was, how close he really was to signing with the UFL. I mean, I think as a last resort, that would have been Vic's only option for him to do. But like I said, I mean, a guy like that, I mean, you always go back to talent. This is the one thing everybody has to remember. Do you have the talent? And I always think about a guy like Lawrence Phillip. Talent. The guy had talent. And that's why he could get kicked out of the NFL, suspended, miss time, do this, do that. But he always kept getting a job. Why? Because he had talent. And why? Because teams want to win. Why? There's no cost to doing it. They just want to get it done. And if this guy provides the most, you know, if he can benefit the team better than anybody else out there that they can sign, that team is going to sign him. You know, they trust me, the PR and the media relations, these guys are going to have they're not going to go into this blinded. They're not just going to pick up the phone and not have all their horses in line, ready for the, you know, onslaught of what's going to, you know, come to them after signing a guy like Michael Vick. And I think it's been relatively quiet, really, for Michael Vick and the Eagles. I mean, you know, it hasn't been like a media circus thus far. I think there's more media circus surrounding John and Kate plus 8 and their divorce. Like I said, a guy like Michael Vick, talented, he's going to get signed. Flip side of that, take a Maurice Claret. Third round. Denver Broncos, didn't even make it out of camp. He never even got picked up by anybody else. Why? Because the talent wasn't there. I mean, if you guys think Claret was so good, he was so awesome, do you really not believe a team would have took a shot? And all the lost stuff came afterwards. You know, it wasn't like he was in the middle of this when Denver released him. He just got cut. Preseason. I mean, he didn't make it out of it, you know, and it wasn't like teams were clamoring to get him on their team. Nobody cared. Why? Because they knew the skill set isn't there. Maurice Claret, Lawrence Phillips. One guy keeps getting re-signed, one guy doesn't. You know, you can look at that like the Charles Rogers, too. I mean, you know, he came out a couple weeks ago and said, you know, he was getting high every day. You know, well, you know what? He was getting high every day, but still, the skill set must not have been there. You know, because teams are going to take a risk on these guys. You know, if he was that good afterwards, somebody would have signed him. Somebody would have said, let's bring this guy in. But it ain't there. And that's why, like I said, that's why, you know, if Michael Vick didn't get signed by an NFL team, then you might have had to wonder how good he is right now or where he's at. But an NFL team sacrificing a position on that 53-man roster, having to give up some money, and knowing all the baggage that Michael Vick's going to bring, all that baggage, you better darn well believe that he has his skills. I mean, it wasn't like he was off in the tundra for 25 years and came out like a caveman. I mean, the guy, you know, he was a year away from football. What, a year, 2 years? You know? And he's back. You know, that's it. You know, like I thought, and, you know, you see a lot of these guys, they go through problems. They come out, you know, somehow they, you know, they play well and everything's forgotten. And it's a whole different thing. And like I said, I wish them the best. I got no harm, no foul here with me. And you're listening to Monday Night Lights, powered by All Access Football. Make sure you go to the website, NFL Draft Bible. I think we finally got our rosters. The depth charts are updated on there. You can go there, find out all the latest depth charts. That's a nice little tool for you guys doing your fantasy drafts and whatnot. You know, go on there. You're going to get the latest guys. And then you're not just going to go there and find Anquan Boldin and Steve Preston and Larry Fitzgerald. You're going to get every single guy that's in that camp. I mean, you're talking nine deep. You know, you're looking crazy names. Lance Law, Greg Carr. It's cuckoo pills, baby. Cuckoo pills. And also got to talk to one of my favorite guys in football, Mr. John Gruden, formerly the coach of the Oakland Raiders and the Super Bowl winning Tampa Buccaneers when he was there during that time. And I was kind of surprised that he kind of shot down the questions of getting back into football. But I would bet a pretty penny if somebody was like Jerry Jones was to give Mr. Gruden a call, maybe just hypothetically, just saying, you know, what if those Dallas Cowboys started off a little struggling, they're 0-4, and the ponies are circling the wagon, and Wade Phillips is on the hot seat, and Jason Garrett's offense isn't doing much, so his chance of taking that star job is gone. You know, Jerry Jones picks up the phone. I think he calls John Gruden or even a Shanahan. I think Gruden would jump at the opportunity. The guy loves football too much. You can just feel it. You can look it in his eyes and just know, man, he loves football. And here's John Gruden. We're here with John Gruden, formerly of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Oakland Raiders. John, I was wondering how it is. This is your new gig. How's it going?
Well, it's going great. I'm fired up, a little bit nervous, but I'm doing something I love. I love the NFL, and you know, I'm working with some really good people that have helped me. So hopefully I get off to a good start.
So when you wake up every morning and you see these preseason camps and all this training and stuff, I mean, I know you have to have that itch. I mean, what goes through your mind?
You know, you've done it for so long. Sure, you miss it. But this job has afforded me an opportunity to stay really close to it. And yeah, you miss coaching, but at the same time, you're really excited about what the future has to offer.
Excellent. And I know you're a legend. You're a legend for the hours that you used to put in the office, sometimes not coming home, they said, and spending so much time there. Now, when John Gruden gets another head coaching job, is there anything going to change? I mean, spending some time away, have you had time to reflect? Like, are you going to change it? Or if you get that call, are you just going to be right back?
I'm really not thinking about coaching right now. I've got enough on my plate. This is new. This is neat, and this is exciting. And
this is like your rookie game tonight here.
I need the preseason. You know what I mean? I feel like a rookie. Hopefully these guys don't treat me like I treated some of my rookie quarterbacks. But I'm going to take it, you know, one step at a time. I want to do well at this. I'm excited about seeing how I do, and I know I'm going to get feedback from some people that know what they're doing. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, seeing you on the NFL Network when you're covering the combine, you seem like you really enjoyed that, and it came across well.
Well, you know, I love football, you know, and this is a neat deal. I get to see Pittsburgh up close. I got to meet a lot of the Arizona Cardinals players and coaches last night. And this is a whole different perspective, and I'm really enjoying it.
And I know when you started this out, touch base, I'm not familiar. When you first started out, now, you were working out of your car. You weren't getting paid with hunger. How was that? How did that all come about?
You know, I was one of the first quality control coaches ever. That's maybe the true distinction I'm most proud of. But I was very fortunate to be in that San Francisco 49er organization. George Seifert, Bill Walsh, Mike Holmgren, Eddie DeBartolo. And we had a pretty good quarterback at that time, Joe Montana. So I got to learn an offense that just dazzled me and still does today, and made some connections, got some breaks because of that, and had a chance to become a head coach.
Yeah, fantastic one. Ms. Gruden, thanks for your time. Oh. That was Johnny Gruden, now part of the ESPN ensemble that does Monday Night Football, around with Mike Tirico and Von Jaworski. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear John. They don't have that in the press box during the game, so I'll have to see him. Is Monday Night Football on tonight? You know, there's so many games on, and the schedule during the preseason is kind of crazy, so something to keep your eyes on. And one of the last interviews we're going to bring you today is Mike Piera. He is the vice president of officiating. If you guys watch the NFL Network, you know you see him in there on his weekly thing where he talks with Rich Eisen. They go over some of the plays made or not made by NFL officials. You know, the guy knows his stuff. I mean, to be the head of officiating in the NFL, the guy brought a lot of insight, and the guy has a lot of pull. And like I said, we're going to play that for you. This is Mike Piera. He's the vice president of officiating for the National Football League, and that's a pretty impressive title, if you ask me. Like I said, there's only one that has it, and it's Mr. Piera. I'm here with Mike Pereira after the Pittsburgh-Arizona game. Mr. Pereira, I thought you were retired. I thought back in January.
Well, I announced.
You announced, but
I announced that I'm retiring after this season.
Oh, okay.
So
I took it that you were retired because I remember watching it on NFL Network, and then I saw you tonight up in the press box.
Yeah. No, I'm here for one more year. We had made plans actually with my contract that we were going to extend it for one more year a couple years ago, actually.
Okay.
So the whole thought was to go through this final season, and then I'll be out the end of April.
Okay, and that's what I noticed you in there. I said, that has to be the hardest working retired man I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You're sitting at that booth.
When I retire, you won't see me here. You will not see me here in a preseason game after I retire.
Excellent. And, the league came up with four new rules this season. I know one was, the defensive guy isn't allowed to lunge back at the, quarterback.
Right.
How do you think that's going to be viewed overall?
Well, I think it's fine. Certainly the committee and the ownership, it was so much so about player safety in all aspects of the game. Special teams was really huge in the elimination of the wedge and elimination of the second onside kick and the bunch, and then, of course, hits on defenseless players and really trying to take the head and the neck out of the game totally. So I think it's going to be fine. You know, it's kind of tough on players because you have to get them to change the way that they play. But they adjust. They do adjust, and they've adjusted in the past when we took the helmet-to-helmet on the defenseless receiver out. They lowered the target area, and they'll adjust here too. It's just about, and I know it's difficult for some people to accept, but we want players to remain in the game, and we want, the game is about the players, and so if we can keep them safe without really, affecting the integrity of the game, then I think that's our responsibility, and I think that's what we've done.
Yeah, and like I said, it makes perfect sense. Obviously, the NFL, every fan suffered with the loss of a player like Tom Brady last season.
Sure.
And the one I was actually interested in asking you about is the wedge on the kick returns. I think no more than two guys can form the wall.
Exactly.
How did that come about?
Well, it comes about really like a lot of the rule changes. We look at injuries every offseason, and not necessarily the play itself, but what causes the injury. And when we saw the cervical injuries and the concussions that came from the collisions in the wedge, it's really over 2 years. We started looking at that after the 07. Season. And really at that point, I think the committee realized they had to do something with the wedge. And so we studied it all last year, and they took the bold step because it changes the way that 31 out of 32 teams return kickoffs. And so it's a major change. But I think it's a change that's really going to keep player safety safer on both sides, the wedge blockers and the guy going into the wedge. So early from what I've seen, watching the Hall of Fame game and being here tonight, I think it's a good change, and I think it's going to really result in what we wanted to, a safer play in the kickoff return.
Do you ever get any personal phone calls from any assistant coaches, or anything?
Well, no.
You want to bring up a topic like
well,
that?
Well, when you change a play with special teams, you're going to hear from 32 special teams coaches because they are fanatics. and I've always said they're crazy, special team coaches, but so am I. And I think that's why I like special teams coaches so much. So I've always been interested in special teams. And, I try to explain to them exactly why we make the change and what I think the ramifications will be. But I think it's one that's going to be accepted fine.
Excellent. And before we let you here go tonight, that time you say you're studying the plays, how long does that take to come to a conclusion? How many hours do you guys,
Well, it's not hours, it's days.
Days?
Basically it's 4 days or 3 days that we spend in Indianapolis in the first part of the meeting. And then spend 10 days down in Florida for the second part of the meeting, and we study all aspects of the game. But the injuries we spend a lot of time on. I mean, that's where the horse collar change came up, when all of a sudden we saw these devastating knee injuries, and we saw that the tactic, legal at the time, but that's what caused those injuries, was this horse collar technique of going inside the shoulder pads and pulling the guy down. So we made a change just based on what we saw in the injury there, and that's where this wedge thing came up. We saw these injuries and said we've got to make a change.
And being so involved with football and, you know, the top level, I know you're close with Roger Goodell and Paul Tagliabue. How was the transition, I mean, for Roger Goodell? I mean, do you think he's, I mean, I know you think he's doing a good job, but the pressure he's under, how do you think he's...
Well, I mean, I think he's under pressures that I'm not certainly not involved in, and far more pressures than I'm under. But I think he's committed to the players, and yeah. and he's really committed to the safety of the players, and I appreciate that. Obviously, everybody knows that he's concerned about the integrity of the game, but he's not only that, but he wants to make the game as safe as possible because he wants the players to have longer careers than they're having right now, and he'll take that extra step, even if it's controversial, to make it safer for them.
Excellent. Mr. Pierre, I just wanted to thank you for your time tonight.
You're welcome.
That was Mike Piera, head of officiating for the NFL, and like I said, solid guy. And the thing I took notice of when speaking with him was how he, you know, expressed that, you know, Roger Goodell, his care for the players and their safety. Are you guys getting this? Yeah, you guys are getting this. I'm just going to make sure. No, but they're, you know, talking about their safety and getting that, you know, things like that out there. We're going to touch base here real quick. All right. You know, I wasn't sure if the mic was working. That's why I was a little hesitant on going forward. But, yeah, I mean, Pierre, the thing is, you know, they talk about, you know, the days, you know, that they put into creating these rules. And, you know, it's crazy when you think about it, you know, these rules that are in place. You know, talking with him, the thing I took out of it the most was, you know, a lot of they really weren't rules so much, you know, at least the rules we talked about, you know, they really weren't to change the game. You know, it wasn't like, well, this is going to make special teams better, or this is going to make the offense more efficient, or this is going to make it, you know, harder for teams to score. This was brought up in the safety of the players. And like I said, I thought that was kind of unique, something, you know, like I said, I mean, I really never paid that much attention to it. And there's Raw Talk Radio.
This broadcast will begin just after this brief message.
And we always get that sweet foreign voice every time you log into Block Talk Radio. It's always something to... So we got 12 minutes left, and like I said, I'm not sure if you guys lost me, if I lost you guys. I was going through the motions. But I'm just going to update what I was just talking about with my Vice President of Officiating, Mike Pierre, talking about the new rules that were in place, and he mentioned the safety of the players. It wasn't so much rule change, maybe, you know, the offense getting better field position or special teams getting more yards, you know, off a kickoff, things as such. You know, the rules were put in place to protect players. The first one, you know, a guy's not allowed to lunge after he's tackled. You know, and why? To protect a guy like Tom Brady. I mean, you don't want to see a guy like Tom Brady miss the season. It affects the NFL, affects the money line of the NFL, ticket sales, jersey sales. How many hot dogs you're going to sell at the stadium because you're not going to bother going there that Tom Brady isn't here. Why? Because a guy like Bernard Pollard, you know, kind of roll up on that knee, take the big man down. You know, that's a lot of money. And you think about it like that. Maybe he plays and that's extra money in their pocket. Is, you know, the New England Patriots, another home game in the playoffs, another playoff appearance. So, like I said, rules that are there, put in place to protect the players, and same as the wedge. I mean, when I first saw that rule, you know, why they can't make a wall, you know, it wasn't a perspective of, you know, an advantage towards special teams offensively, defensively, you know, the receiving team or the team that was kicking off. It was about protecting the players. And, you know, it's kind of neat to see how far in detail these guys go. Things that I think, you know, we watch the game, but things we don't take notice of. You know, and obviously that was a topic enough to make a rule change. And like Mike said, you're going to hear about it. Special team coaches are going to let you know. you know, hey, we don't agree with this. But like I said, it's something interesting to take, you know, talk about. And like I said, you know, maybe it's something you might take notice of now, too. You know, you see the kickoffs happening and, you know, you're wondering where those big five-man wedges are. You know, you're not going to see them anymore. Or if you do, you're going to see probably a yellow flag get tossed. Now, getting back to the NFL Draft Bible, there's a lot of new content on there. We've got the updated depth charts. We got the big board for 2010. We got the big board for 2011. You know, we're touching on the prospects that you guys are going to be looking for, you know, to see. And these guys are the guys that are going to be in the NFL soon. These are going to be your top collegiate players at their positions, no matter if it's quarterback. We got the list for you. We got offensive linemen. We got defensive tackle. And, you know, it's just, you know, being able to, you know, do that stuff. You guys look at that stuff. You go to the site. You check out that, you know, big board for 2010. And when you check out that big board, like I said, you're going to see these guys. You're going to start learning, living and learning and knowing it. You know, it's going to sink into you. You know, and then, you know, the draft rolls around. You know, you're familiar with these guys. And, you know, hey, everybody wants to one-up their buddy. You want to one-up your buddy? You want to go sit at BW3s and have some chicken wings and drink a beer with your friends? You know how you're going to look more knowledgeable? You're going to get to the NFL Draft Bible. You're going to look at the big 2010 big board. You're going to look at that 2011. What am I saying to you? It's 2 years away, but the prospects are up there. Shoot that, you know, crack the egg of knowledge on their heads with that one. So yeah, you know, I was looking at some stuff, you know, Tyler Sheen in the Bowling Green. You know, I think, you know, 2010, this guy's going to be a nice sleeper pick. They're going to look at you like you're, Ostradamus. You're like the John Madden of the future. Like I said, updated depth charts, you guys got those now. We finally got those in place for you. Been working on those a long time, trying to get those out to you. A lot of, you know, like I said, they're all there. They're deep. Like I said, these aren't just the rinky-dinky depth charts with Kurt Warner, Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald, Ben Roethlisberger, Willie Parker. You know, you're going five deep at the running backs. You're going, you know, if they're in camp and they got that uniform on, they should be on the list. And if not, that means it was a late-minute scratcher. Something bizarre had to happen because, like I said, a lot of time put into those. Because, trust me, I know. You are listening to Monday Night Lights, tailgate party style, here at 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You guys know it. Remember, powered by All Access Football. And the content you want to check out, I'm gonna keep speaking it, baby. NFL Draft Bible. You guys got to start checking that site out. Start seeing what's on there. A lot of what we're talking to you about comes from there. And 7 minutes to go before we wrap this puppy up here to start a new work week. I was laughing. I was watching the preseason games Saturday, and I looked at my wife and I said, "This is the first preseason game that I've watched where I haven't been at." I was fortunate enough to cover the Bills and the Titans in Canton, did the Steelers and Cardinals in Pittsburgh. You know, and I kind of felt empty-handed just sitting there on the couch, you know, watching the St. Louis. Who was St. Louis playing? I can't even think. That shows you how, oh gosh, brain twist. Like I said, watching the games, you know, and then you know, came 10 o'clock rolls around, and you're watching the Broncos and the 49ers, and another guy, you know, 3 carries, 18 yards, no Sean Moreno. I mean, he tweaked the knee a little bit out. They said he's gonna be 1 to 2 weeks gone, but. You know, a guy like that, he's definitely showing the flashes, getting in there and hitting it quick. Definitely a guy that you people are going to want to keep your eye on, I should know, Sean Moreno. That's not much insight. I think everybody feels that way, but I think he has the ability to be very special. And like I said, I mean, you got to stay healthy. That's the key. If you don't stay healthy, no matter how good you are, you're not going to make it. Longevity creates legacy, and that all becomes, you know, being healthy. You know, I mean, look at a guy like Terrell Davis and how awesome he was during his playing career. You know, people question if he should get in the Hall of Fame or not. You know, and you kind of wonder. I mean, this guy went over 2,000. I mean, he led the Broncos, you know, to their Super Bowls. You know, I mean, Elway couldn't do him by himself. You know, I mean, he sure helped. Trust me. I don't know if Davis would have got his without Elway either. You know, but it takes two. I mean, but Davis, you look at a guy like Davis and you got to wonder, you know, if he'll ever get in. And, you know, just looking at it right now, I'd say no. Not that I want to put him in, but I just don't see him getting in. You know, 2 Super Bowl rings, a 2,000-yard season. You know, during his playing time, I mean, Davis was just a beast. So you got to stay healthy. That's the key. I mean, if you don't stay healthy, it's just, it's all for naught, man. You know, you get slower, you're more banged up, you get older, guys come in, they're younger, they're faster, they want to take what you have, you know, and when everything's hurting and aching, man, you just can't keep pace with these guys coming in trying to fight for your job. And like I said, you got to stay healthy. You have to stay healthy. I'm looking at some other things things I wanted to touch base on the show here. I mean, I think Brady Quinn's kind of separating himself from Derek Anderson. I think this is a foregone conclusion. I think this was Quinn's job in the first place unless he completely fell flat on his face. I mean, the money's wrapped up in Quinn. I mean, Mangini really has no, he didn't bring in Derek Anderson like Savage did, and Savage had he was acquainted with Anderson during their time with Baltimore when he was, the scout GM there. So I think, like, Phil Savage, he's gone. This is Mangini's show. I don't think he's committed to either one of those guys. I think Quinn, I think he has the more upside of the two. And like I said, the money's there. I mean, Anderson signed a new contract. But, they got two quality quarterbacks. And, I mean, they went through all three last year. I mean, they went through Anderson. They went through Quinn. They went through Dorsey. And then, I think they had Brad Kwiatkowski, I think, starting. Who knows who they had starting. You have those guys, and so, they got two quality quarterbacks. It's a matter for the Cleveland Browns to put it together. And I think the latest I heard, and this could have changed, but Tavares Jackson will get the start in Minnesota. And I think I would pull the plug on it. I'm not saying Sage Rosenfeld's the answer, but I don't think Tavares Jackson is the answer either. And I think Brad Childress is on the hot seat. And I think this is Sage Rosenfeld's job. I think he's, I think during his short time, starting, I think he's kind of proven a little bit more capable. I mean, besides him blowing the Colts game last year, I mean, I think that was his shot to maybe take over the job for Schaub. He led that dramatic comeback over the Indianapolis Colts at home, only to blow it with that late INT. And, that was a big game for the Colts. I mean, that game would have sunk the Colts season. I mean, the Colts were struggling to start that season off. Rosenfels plays well. I mean, got that team grooving. And I think everybody's on their feet. This is our guy now. We're going to stand behind him because Schaub's always hurt. And, this is the new direction. I mean, you get that feeling during a game. Bam, what's he do? INT time. And then you knew from that point, man, any shot in Texas, baby, that time in Houston, that time was over for Sage. He was getting his butt out of town. Remember a little Beverly Hills Cop with Serge, Serge Rosenfeld? Like I said, he's the guy that you want to look at. He's the guy that's, on pace to, I think he's going to outplay Tavares Jackson. And in the end, I think the big man down in Mississippi, number four, is just passing time. I don't think he wants to go to camp. And like I said, he's this thing ain't dead yet. You just know it isn't. Childress, this could be his last year there. I mean, I think he's created enough controversy within the team. And come on, don't the players can say whatever they want. They ain't going to come out and just flat out deny it and, badmouth the situation. You walk into your job, and your boss and your supervisor are calling another guy to come take your job, but yet they want you to perform your best, but they're just waiting on this guy to come in. You're okay. You come in, come on in, you're all right, buddy, come on in. Well, we're going to make a call over here. We're going to see if we can get this guy to come in. And if we can get him to come in, then you're out. But you know what? You bust your butt. You give us 110% because we love you. Well, we just don't love you as much as this other guy. But, you're our man. If we can't do any better, I guess we're stuck with you. But, but if we get this guy, you're out. There's no questions asked. You're done. But, like I said, I think there's a lot of too much of what happened. And every time you listen to Bus Cook, he has he always denies everything. He denies that he even knows Brett Favre, that he's ever even heard of Brett Favre's existence. It's like, the guy's on goofy pills. It's crazy, And like I said, how long have we been doing this show? And how long have we been talking about Brett Favre being a Minnesota Viking? I mean, it's been since, May? April, May? I mean, it's August. We're going in the second week of preseason football. And you still can't absolutely 100% deny that Brett Favre may not be a Minnesota Viking. And that's crazy. And these guys are in camp. They're busting tail. They're in the heat. It's a lot to ask for those guys to just say, yeah, you know, we're with it. We're down with you. You know, and I mean, sacrifice. And I think you're going to sacrifice it for the team because they're competitors. But to say they got Childress back as a coach, come on, man. If you're in that situation and your boss comes in and is pulling the same chain with you, you know darn well when your time comes, you're not going to want this guy. You're going to say, you know what, get him out of here. You're going to be all for it the day you wake up and you read the newspaper. This guy's been canned. Now, I'm telling you guys, everybody can say whatever they want, but you know that's the truth. This is what those guys are thinking deep down. And it's just human nature. It's just the way it is. I'm your host, Beaumar Shant. You've been listening to the NFL Draft Bible, powered by All Access Football. This is the Monday tailgate party. We're wrapping up a fantastic show. Like I said, get to the NFL Draft Bible, updated depth charts, 2010 Big Board, 2011 Big Board. Check out the prospects. Thank you.